He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
It is indeed, and I am in the south coast of Massachusetts as I do this particular show, whenever you hear it, and it is a place where I sometimes see interesting vehicles driving around that I don't normally see in our broadcast area, and I told my co-host Jay, who's listening, that I saw it yesterday, and it was parked right below the house that I'm in, a Mercedes-Benz Unimog, bright emerald green, and it's the biggest thing that was in the parking lot at the place where it was parked, and I was trying to think about how that kind of vehicle, and I don't know how many listeners know about what a Unimog is, but it's a great big off-road, very off-road worthy vehicle that probably could have military applications if it was in a different
That's where it,
what I saw.
What? That's where it began its life. And it makes a Hummer look like a Tonka Toys.
That's correct. It makes the Hummer look like a Tonka Toy. Anyways, I've never seen one here until yesterday, a couple of days ago. And that joins the Broncos, the Jeeps, and that kind of thing that goes around an area where there are beaches where theoretically you can go beaching with these vehicles. I'm not sure whether Unimog was going off the road. It looked so clean. It looked like it was brand new right off a showroom floor. But they are an amazing vehicle. Not many of them are probably on the roads in our country, although maybe there are somewhere else. But that's how we'll start the show. Jay, why don't you go in and bring up some things you'd like to bring up?
Well, I saw right here in the northwest corner, I saw a pink 55 Ford Thunderbird yesterday, which I thought was pretty interesting. And at the same gas station at the same time, there was also a Triumph TR6, locally owned, and a late 60s Jaguar E-Type. So, you know, life in the northwest corner, weekends in the northwest corner are kind of pretty fancy too, I guess.
Yeah, they are. That's true. Was there any racing that went on in Lime Rock this weekend or not?
Actually, yes, it was. It was a Lime Rock Drivers Club race weekend. Weekend, Friday, Saturday, and a BMW Club event with that. So not a big. It was not a big Lime Rock event, and that was certainly not what drew these particular cars I saw. In the area.
Can I just say that compared to the whatever Robin was talking about, these cars are really, these little sports cars are really little. Like, they are really little. Speaking of Tonka Toys, I'm going to go with Matchbox.
You know, and I'm opening a door wide open here for Robin to jump in, but the size of cars has grown, you know, crazily over the last few decades. I mean, I was at Lime Rock Saturday, and there was a Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser. It was a 1970 model, and I know the car well because there was one in my family when I was a kid, and it was a 1972. So I walked to this young kid who owned the car, and he said, yeah, it's 1970. And I remember that car being huge. I remember us piling up like a dozen kids in the car. And when you look at it now, I mean, it's a big car, but it's not all that big, and it's certainly not as heavy as modern cars.
Well, over here, there's a Oldsmobile convertible from about the 1960s, and those were huge vehicles, Jay. Remember the General Motors and Ford were building these huge boats?
But
and I think that Oldsmobile that I'm talking about is probably, I didn't measure it, but it's got to be between 18 and 20 feet long. It's also wide. And so as Jill was just mentioning about how cars have grown a lot and the older sports cars are small, like the my RX-7, for example, and the early Miatas. The Miatas or the MX-5s, as you call them now, or we call them now, are a bit bigger than they were 20 years ago, but all the cars, my Bronco that I had, the 69 and 73 versions, two-door only at that time when they were made, seem much more agile and functional than the new Broncos do. Maybe the two-door Broncos that are out now are more similar in size to the original ones, but the four doors and the Raptors, as they're calling a version of the Bronco, are wider and just bulkier, which to me make them less agile off-road than they might well be adapted to desert running and or the highways that we drive them mostly around these days. So, and cars have been getting bigger all the time. They still get bigger. My A8 Audi, which is a 2000, I think is about the equivalent to the current A4-sized Audi that's out today. And the A4 Audi sedan is this... is there an A3, Jay? I'm not sure, but the A4 is
an A3, yep.
Supposed to be about the smallest version of the sedan versions of the Audis that are on the road today. But it looks side by side to my A8, which is where they both are at the moment. It's the equivalent to my A8 in size of the vehicle, and the new A8s are if not a foot or a half longer, a foot longer than mine were, and they all come in AA8L, which is the long version range now. You can't get a non-long size of that. And the American, the car industry in general has been doing that to cars for decades. So when you see the old cars that Jill was mentioning, they are neat to look at. They are actually a lot of fun to drive, but boy, they don't hold the road like the heavier weight longer versions of some of these cars that they succeeded do today.
Well, they look tiny. That's all I'm going to say. They sound.
Well, they don't have a lot of safety features. They don't have airbags in them. They don't have. They don't have
crumple zones. They don't
frames
have,
no. and. And they are, they're a lot lighter weight, and they're more agile, and they drive very differently. Sometimes they're not as safe. Sometimes they're safer.
So, Robin.
But they sure are fun to have.
Robin, you traveled to Westport. I'm presuming, did you take the opportunity to go through Great Barrington?
I did. You mean, was a roundabout?
How's the roundabout? Roundabout report.
Yeah. I went up to look at this roundabout. Let's talk about that roundabout for a minute. Jay, you're very familiar with, we talked about a little bit on a recent show about the roundabouts in Europe, which, how similar is the roundabout that's still not quite completed in Great Barrington to what you're seeing in Europe?
It's still not quite completed, and I'm hopeful that it will be absolutely great and function as intended. It is, I think it's well designed. It's hard to really see, there's one more layer of asphalt to go in, and then signage and line markings have to be added. So it'll be interesting to see how it ends up. But I think it's just great. I think it's exactly what was needed. It's probably slightly larger in diameter than. Typical European roundabouts would be for that size intersection or that amount of traffic or the size of these roads, which are there's only three roads that intersect there, and one
41,
of them that goes
7 and 23, 41
it's one road and the second one that comes into it, but so there's three in points or out points, if you will, around the roundabout, right? Am I correct?
Yeah.
Can't see a fourth one.
Yeah, as you know, the tractor trailers have to be able to navigate them.
Well, and I was going to say that is a big
their trailers across the center lines of these roundabouts.
That is the big difference with European traffic and our traffic, not only the size of cars but the size of tractor trailers, which are a lot more nimble in Europe and a lot longer here. So the way these roundabouts are designed is you have the asphalt that goes around, but then there's a smooth curb, if you will, and then an inner circle that's usually cobblestone in Europe, and here it's some kind of different. It's not asphalt. I think it's stones or cement blocks. Anyway,
the pavers.
The pavers. Thank you very much. I think they're cement pavers. I'm not 100% sure, but they're slightly higher, and tractor trailers can just roll over them, Or if you're in your car and you're trying to do like doing what you do on a racetrack and jump the curbs, you can do that too. But it really isn't recommended, nor is it intended to.
Jay, how do you consider this one to compare to the Goshen roundabout, which has been around for years and works very successfully? And I note in the wintertime, they take down what are called, I guess, are portable arrows that are sitting there in the inner circle of the roundabout, so that they can plow them better, and probably people can cut the corners a little better.
But they have
the arrows up on there. I think they're on concrete pedestals or something, which they can move.
I think the Great Barrington traffic circle is more like the Europeans. So it's elevated in the center, and you kind of want that visual block, if you will, in the center. I mean, when you're getting to the traffic circle, what you want to be looking at is, and I hate to say this, you're going, because we drive on the right side of the road, all these traffic circles obviously are going counterclockwise, right? So as you're getting to the traffic circle, the trick is to be looking to your left to see what oncoming traffic is. And
right.
And if people are being civil and mindful of other drivers on the road, what the idea is, you put your signal on when you exit the traffic circle. So you're in the circle, and if you're looking to the road that is on your left, you want to know that if a car is coming around the traffic circle, is it going to get out of the traffic circle right where you are, or is it going to or is it going to go past you, and therefore you have to yield. So there's a little of there's a lot of civility involved in navigating these traffic circles, and it'll take time for people to get used to them. But
yes,
I was surprised yesterday. You know, traffic was not very heavy in Great Barrington. I was there yesterday afternoon, but it flowed well. I think it's great. I think it's exactly what they needed.
I think the biggest confusion that I have seen at the American roundabouts, especially when they've been new, and the Great Barrington one is brand new, is the somewhat confused situation about when is the person entering that it looks like it's ahead of you as you're coming in, meant to yield to you as you're going around it, versus you yield to the traffic coming in and letting them in.
I recall...
It works in Europe very well, right?
It works in Europe now, but I remember vividly, 20, 30 years ago when traffic circles were new, some traffic circles you had to yield going in, and others you had the right of way going in. That was a mess. And they've standardized the design over time so that, all traffic circles are pretty similar, and the traffic rules are the same. You want consistency in the design of them and the build. I think the one in Great Barrington is looking to be a model of what we should be getting in the future.
Okay.
And the mentioning that it's standardized is probably helpful.
Yes.
For those of us who took one look at it and our brains sort of went flying out our ears and like, okay, I'll just go around. I'll go another direction.
Well, sometimes people fight for positioning in the roundabouts.
That's not good manners, by the way.
It's not good manners. And aren't some roundabouts also two lanes, so that you have an outer lane that goes around and an inner lane?
This is where they get more complex, is when you have, first of all, two-lane roads or two lanes of traffic in each direction in the roads, or some of the roads leading to the traffic circle have two lanes.
Two lanes.
Which is the case in Great Barrington if you're coming from Main Street. So if you're going south on Route 7, you are coming, at least it used to be a two-lane. You had a right lane at the light.
Only
that would
turn
go,
and a straightaway lane.
And a straightaway lane. It'll be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a merging two-to-one lane way before the traffic circle, which would be smartest thing to do, and again, that we'll only know when the work is finalized. But emerge into one lane before the traffic circle, and then just it's one lane around the traffic circle. But yes, in Europe, you have two lanes around the traffic circle in a lot of cases. In larger traffic circles, and again, that takes a little more time yet to learn how to navigate.
I'd like to change topics if we can.
Sure.
Jay, I have a race car question for you. I should know the answer, and I don't, but I watched the Lime Rock race, delayed race that went on over, I think you were still in Belgium and missed it.
Yep.
But they delayed it. I watched it last week. And my one question was, are Audis Quattros now in the races, or are they front-wheel or are they rear-wheel Audi drives only?
If,
I remember the Quattro was a big controversial advantage that Audis had.
I am, if this was a GT3 race, and I'm not...
I think it might have been a GP3 race.
If it was
there
the main
Audi
race,
Audi A4s or something, I don't know what Audis were running, but
I
any
think
Audi, are they running Quattro or not?
I believe not. I think the GT3 cars are, I know that for a fact, if there's still some running, which are the same as the Lamborghinis, and are pretty much the same car as the Lamborghini, are rear-wheel drive only, and rear-engine, you know, rear-engine, rear-wheel drive. And if there was a GT4 race, I am 90% sure, and I should know the answer, that those cars are front-drive cars.
Okay. So they aren't. Are they don't permit the Quattro drivetrain in the race.
I don't know that they don't permit, but it might just be that you know you're not necessarily gaining anything. With an all-wheel drive car on the track.
Well, we don't have call-ins, so we can't have listeners correct us if we're incorrect.
Thank you for your thoughts. We can ask people. You do have. You don't. You might not need call-in. You might not want to be interrupted, Robin.
I'd like to make a gas note. I forgot on a recent show to talk about gas prices because they came way down in our Northwest
corner. And then we start going back up?
They were so low, they were down to $4.14.90 a gallon, and they jumped like 20 cents or more a gallon recently, a few days ago.
Right.
And yet they remained at certain pumps in Tarrington still at $4.14.90. And the supplier of the stations that I see where they jumped own all the stations that I saw the jumps on. And I was very curious. I thought oil had gone up. I watched oil pricing on a last Friday or Thursday, and the prices had come down. And yet this particular supplier had a big increase across the board in our northwest corner, taking the advantage we all had for a few days far away from what we were enjoying.
You're talking about that advantage to getting the oil companies like what, like $37 million a second? That advantage?
I don't care about that. I just was surprised that one supplier jacked the prices up significantly, as if everything was going to go back up again.
So,
and,
by the way, Jay,
it has not happened.
I want to bring up a little experience I had last week. And I'm going to put Volvo on the spot here. I have a client who has a Volvo Hybrid XC90, which was an expensive option when that model came out with the hybrid powertrain. I think it added like $18,000 to the price of the car.
That's a lot of gas.
Anyway, they've run into trouble with the car. Broke down actually in front of my house, and so they asked me, they called the Volvo dealer, and that dealer will remain nameless for now, the dealer knew that they had to do work on the car and they had ordered parts, so the dealer knew the car had to come back to the shop. And they said, well, okay, well, we need to get it towed in. And they said, well, call Volvo, I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, 1-800 Volvo equivalent.
Yeah, and so they called and they said, well, no, you cannot schedule a call, a tow. You know, we'll pick up the car within 45 minutes of when you call us in and ask us to tow the car. So they were leaving town and they asked me to do it. So I call Volvo Care, and I'm not sure what the concierge service is called, but and sure enough, somebody answers on the first ring. But it took 4 hours to have the car picked up, and it was, you know, and logically it was picked up by a fairly local towing company, and you know, I don't hold a towing company responsible for this, but it was, in my mind, piss-poor service. And Volvo has been one of the manufacturers touting their, you know, their concierge service. They tried to get this, what was it, Robin, a couple years ago, where you could, you know, buy a subscription and just, you know, drive a Volvo for a week and then drive another one.
Right.
And it just shocked me as how lousy their roadside assistance service actually is.
Well,
and hopefully
this
is just an isolated incident.
For listeners who have had to use roadside services, and I recently had to use AAA, and it took 3.5 hours before the car finally got taken off the side of the highway where we were stranded and delivered to a location where I was going to pick it up the next day. And I don't know whether concierge service means much more than what regular service when they use third parties to come and pick up cars. I don't know how any dealer can or manufacturer can promise concierge service on a 45-minute pickup after you call and actually provide it. If they can, maybe Rolls-Royce could, but I think this concierge service claims that they may have a concierge aspect to some of their services, but I don't think it
extends to roadside
towing when you have a breakdown situation, because no, these dealers don't have their own trucks that they can just launch.
Well, I guess my beef here was twofold. One is that the dealer shoved the responsibility of calling the roadside assistance on the client instead of doing it themselves and managing that themselves.
Okay,
and when
I have an answer to that. I have a like kind problem, which I'd like to just get in before the show ends.
Well, you've got 2 minutes.
I had a Jeep, brand new. It broke down. I locked myself out of the Jeep. I could see a Jeep Chrysler dealer from where I was locked out of my car, and this was several years back, and I called the Jeep dealer. I thought they could have come down and provided concierge service. It didn't need to be called that. And either pick the car up or probably have their own electronic key or way to get into the key. But I had to call Jeep. They told me that I had to call Jeep roadside assistance, and it took 3.5 hours before I was unlocked. I was able to get into my car.
And I'm going to add to that.
It took 30 seconds to access the door opening when they got there. But it took 3.5 hours to get there.
And I'm going to add to that, and Robin, you might remember this, but it'll tell you how old you are. Way back at the beginning with Isuzu, I had to call 1-800-ISUZU, and they were happy to come get me in 3 hours or whatever, but they were only going to tow the car to the nearest dealership to where I broke down, and I needed
that's
it to
correct.
Go someplace. And that, you know, that's a whole other can of worms. Anyway.
Yeah, well,
so,
roadside assistance is problematical, and people should not. I mean, theoretically, it's a good service to have, but if the third-party jobbers are not nearby, you just can't expect quick roadside assistance anywhere in this country.
So that means don't leave the dealership.
To happen. It's a crapshoot as to whether it's going to come in an hour or 3 hours.
So pack a lunch and a bottle of water wherever you go. My tip.
Okay, safety tip time?
Nope, you're out of time. He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.